Good morning, good afternoon, good day, America. This is Eugene V. Colson at Mind Controlled America, and I have a guest host for today. Al, are you with us, Al?
Yes, I am.
Al, and what was the subject you wanted to talk about today?
The Illuminati.
Oh, great. Well, Al, you get the whole run of the show, and to regular listeners, Al's going to be with us again next week on Thanksgiving. Al, take the show from here, and it's all yours.
Okay, thanks, Eugene. I've done quite a bit of research about this topic, the Illuminati, over the years, and actually I wrote a book, but it's out of print, so I won't mention the name. What I would like to do is start off by saying that people who are listening, they might want to take out a dollar bill and look on the back of it. And you'll notice on the left side of the dollar bill, there's a pyramid, and there's a capstone with an eye in the middle of the capstone with what looks like light coming from the capstone. Well, that's a curious symbol to have on our dollar bill. Most people associate the pyramid with Egypt, although there's pyramids in other parts of the world. And this symbol is a representation of the power and the control of the Illuminati. The eye in the middle of the capstone is the eye of Horus. Horus was a pharaoh that was associated with Isis and Osiris, which were Egyptian gods or semi-gods, and the Egyptian influence is still pervasive in throughout the world in terms of the Illuminati having deep roots in Egyptian mythology and theology. Also, the Illuminati, which basically is a secret organization or network of organizations, a better way to describe it, operates behind the scenes and has been operating as an influence in the world, dating back to the Egyptian civilization and before then. There's an association, which I'm not going to go into detail about, the association of the Illuminati with extraterrestrial races. That's a whole other topic that might, you know, warrant exploration another time. But I just want to mention that the Illuminati earthbound organizations and families, networks are associated with manipulative ETs, but to focus a little more on who the Illuminati is, or how they influence things in the world. The main organization that's influenced or associated with the Illuminati is the Masons, the Masonic Order, the Knights Templar, Knights of Malta. They have a lot of different names, and they've been in existence for eons, going again back to Egyptians and beyond that. They are involved in all aspects of society. Every country in the world has a Masonic Order. And the Masons are involved in positions of power and influence throughout the world, whether it be politics, banking, the media, all facets of society. And not every Mason, not everybody that's a Mason is aware of the pervasive influence of the Masonic Order. It's mainly the higher degree Masons. Now, I've read different things about the highest degree being 33, and some say beyond 33 degrees. Oh, by the way, Eugene, if you want to, you know, cut in any time and make a comment or ask me something, that's fine. Otherwise, I'll just go ahead and talk the whole hour, I guess. Anyway, the Masons are behind the scenes influencing the political, economic, and social, technological aspects of society and the world. And what their agenda is world domination. And they had this agenda going way back in history. World domination as far as natural resources, the economies of every country, energy, transportation, media, as I mentioned, all facets. So they operate in conjunction with other secret networks or societies. For example, the Council on Foreign Relations, CFR, is a very influential, powerful, behind-the-scenes organization that pretty much handpicks, influences decisions about who gets elected in the political realm, you know, whether that be, you know, from Congress or the president or in other parts of the world, in terms of parliaments and prime ministers. Anybody that's in a position of power is associated with the Illuminati and the Masonic Order. That doesn't mean every single individual, but I would say the majority are in fact associated with the Illuminati and the Masons, and it's very difficult to rise to power without their support and acknowledgement. Those individuals who have not been part of this hierarchy of power, that have somehow, you know, infiltrated or become a part of the political system. We can talk about the Kennedy, JFK, for example, as being one who at one time was an integral part of the power, that power structure, but he defied it, and, you know, we know the results of that. Other individuals I can think of right now who were also victims of the power structure because they defied it. One would be Paul Wellstone, who was a senator from Minnesota, who was supposedly died in a plane crash accident. But, you know, that those accidents that occur, they're really not accidents, they're planned. Robert Kennedy Jr. is another example. Bob Kennedy, Robert Kennedy. These folks, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, there's innumerable examples of individuals who have stood up and gained some political power and influence that have fallen by the wayside because they have defied or resisted the powers that be. And so we have an organization, a network of individuals that their agenda is what's called the New World Order, the NWO, which is really a kind of it's not an accurate description of what is happening because new is nothing new about it. The term really, you know, has roots. It goes way back into civilization. Basically, it's a dictatorship. A world dictatorship is a better way to describe it. And the closest we've seen of that recently was with Hitler and his attempts, you know, for world domination through the Nazi organization. Hitler was a lackey, or he was a part of the Illuminati. He was a front man, and he was supported by. This is, I know, hard to believe and accept, but again, if you do the homework, you'll discover that the Nazis were supported by American corporations. And behind the scenes, and families as well. For example, Prescott Bush, who was the grandfather of our present president, had banking investments and commercial dealings with the Nazis. And this is been documented historically through various research and authors and whatnot. There's been many families, rich families, that are associated with the Illuminati that influence world affairs. One family in particular that is very influential within the Illuminati is the Rothschilds. The Rothschilds have been around for hundreds of years. They're predominantly influential in Europe, but again, their tentacles extend around the world, including the United States and China and the Arab world, Russia. They are a banking family. They control the Bank of England and banks throughout Europe, particularly associated with the European Union. They have investments throughout the world, particularly in precious metals and warfare, technology, armaments, gold, diamond, minerals, vast land holdings, you name it, energy. They have an influence in every facet of politics and economic systems throughout the world. Bank of America, for example, is a Rothschild subsidiary. They have influence, if not controlling interest, in the Federal Reserve System. The Federal Reserve banking system is not a federal system. It's not a government system. It's really a private banking system and comprised of various banks like Chase Manhattan, Citibank, National Bank, Bank of America, etc., that really have controlling interest in the economy of this country and the economies of the world. So the Rothschilds are one example of a powerful family. I just recently read on the internet that the assets of the Rothschilds exceed $100 trillion, and that's more than most, if not all, except perhaps United States, more assets than any country in the world. It's just one family, you know, the Rothschilds. And they work hand in glove with other European families, royalty, as well as American aristocracy, plutocracy. For example, the Rockefellers. Of course, most people acknowledge or know the Rockefellers in terms of the oil industry. But the Rockefellers' influence extends, once again, in many different fields beyond just energy, education, and politics. They are intricately associated with, I mentioned, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergers. The Bilderbergers is an organization that meets secretly. Then, you know, there's information on the internet about them. They are a group of elitists that discuss politics and economic affairs. They are the controlling, one of the controlling groups within Europe. And again, they're comprised of European families, the heads of various multinational corporations. For example, Bechtel, General Motors, General Electric, Standard Oil, all the different oil companies, companies involved in generating energy, nuclear power. These people, part of the Bilderbergers, they meet at least annually, and it's, you know, it's almost impossible to get involved or to become part of their decision-making process unless you're an elitist. Some people have managed to infiltrate now and then. And then, you know, how else do we know about these kinds of things? Well, sometimes there's defectors that, you know, they spill the beans about their involvement. at risk of losing their life. So we have the Bilderberger in Europe, associated with the Rothschilds. The Habsburgs is another European family. The Dukes and the Duchess, the Dukes and the Barons and the Kings and the Queens of various countries, the Netherlands, Belgium, France, Spain, Germany, England, the Windsors, they're all associated with the Illuminati. And these are the folks, these are the networks that we don't hear about in the media. It's almost 100% censorship of blanking out of these people, these groups, because they do control the media as well. Through Rupert Murdoch, for example, is one media mogul, Disney, Time Warner, Bertelsmann in Germany, all the media is controlled and influenced by these groups, the Illuminati and the Masons. Therefore, the show that, you know, I'm talking from mind control is very appropriate description of how the media influences the public's opinion about, you know, what's news and what gets aired and what doesn't. The Illuminati has almost ironclad control over all aspects of the media. Therefore, they determine what the public has access to. Now, thank goodness for the internet, because Illuminati doesn't have 100% control, but they have a great deal of influence in terms of information that's disseminated. But in the last 10 years or so, that's kind of had a hole poked in it with the internet. That's why I think well-informed people will go to the internet and look at various sources of information. And of course, you can find out more about the Illuminati by reading about it. Various books and authors have exposed it, as well as information on the internet. And so I encourage all listeners to go beyond the normal channels of information, for example, television and the newspapers and the magazines, which are all, again, influenced by these groups to disseminate basically disinformation and propaganda. And I don't think the majority of people realize to what extent their thoughts are influenced by these groups, how they direct our attention to certain things. For example, you know, whatever is on the TV is also in the newspapers, and everybody's talking about, let's, for example, the financial crisis now, you know. Well, the fact is that we've had financial crises perpetually. This is just the latest on the string of financial crises. For example, the savings and loan failures, they've been going on for over 100 years. People have been losing their shirts by putting their money in the bank. The people, that is, you know, the average person who has a bank account, when these banks fail, you know, the people lose their whole life savings. But who is it that gains from it? The CEOs of the banks, the people who control the banking industry. You know, the bank, one bank gobbles up another bank, and the bigger banks just get even bigger and more powerful. So it's really, a diversion or a distraction to get mentally involved or, you know, associated with the information that the media wants you to focus on. If you really want to become aware and knowledgeable about what's going on in the world, you have to disassociate yourself from the mainstream disinformation process, the mind control process that our host is trying to make people aware of. And it's not necessarily, you know, it's not a covert thing. It's just a pervasive thing. It's institutionalized, and it's a part of our way of life. It's a part of our culture. It's a part of our educational system. That is this stream of focused information at the exclusion of other information, which I'm talking about right now. And once we learn more about the controlling interests, we can begin to think more creatively and more independently, and perhaps make a difference. Now, okay, so I want to go back to the Masons. The Masons, I've had some personal experience with the Masons, and not so much, you know, them being in my face as seeing the influence of the Masons in various cities. I've lived in five different states in the last 10 years, and I've seen the influence of the Masons, whether it be in terms of Masonic temples, or I don't know if most people are aware of what an obelisk is. If you've been to D.C., you know what an obelisk is. It's like the Washington Monument is an obelisk. It's this tall structure. It has a phallic symbolism. The obelisk is associated with Masonic control and Masonic order. When I lived in a city in Arizona, there was an obelisk. Maybe it was about 10 feet. It was made of brick. It was in the middle of a little park, grassy area, which was like an intersection where you couldn't miss it. You know, when you come into town, there was this obelisk in the middle of this grassy park. Most people don't even know what it is. So it's like, okay, the Masons are saying, we have control over this town. How do they control the town? Well, in terms of who's on the city council, who's county commissioners, you know, who's in the state legislature, and goes on up through the federal government, all facets of politics. Usually the mayors are Masons, almost 100%. And the governors and the presidents and the people in Congress, they're all members. Not all. No, I wouldn't say all, but most are members of the Masonic order, and therefore they get their direction from the Masons, and whatever the Masonic agenda is, which goes back to controlling all facets of society and enslaving people. Now, we call that work. Of course, you know, it's kind of ironic that people have to work, and we kind of prize work. The Protestant work ethic is something good, you know, and honorable, and I'm not demeaning work, but the fact remains that most people, especially within the middle class, anybody that's not part of the elite, it's not a matter of choice about working. You got to work to survive, unless you want to be on welfare, you know, and be poor for the rest of your life and be manipulated by the welfare bureaucracy. We have to work. So, you know, when we hear people talk about the virtue of work, it's ironic to me because it's really a form of enslavement. And, you know, people work most of their life. They have to in order to pay their bills and pay their mortgage, feed their family, and get the goodies and all the technological stuff and the toys and whatnot. People talk about how they look forward to retirement. That's what I mean by the irony of it. You know, it's like, oh, I can't wait to retire. I only have 10 more years to retire. So we have kind of an ambivalent attitude towards work, but the fact remains that in order to survive economically, we have to work. Now, work to me is more of a euphemism for economic enslavement, and the system is set up so people are not free, and they're not liberated, they are economic slaves. which, again, I'm not devaluing work itself per se, but it seems to me in a more liberated world where we had true freedom, we would be able to choose how we spend our time, you know, like it's constructive to make a contribution to society and to the betterment of the environment and humankind and whatnot, and then to, you know, to uplift your family and all that kind of thing. But when you're compelled to work, it's different than when you make the choice to work. How many people are actually working at what they love to do? Probably very few. This is part of the system that is controlled by elitists. Another thing I find very sad in terms of people's consciousness and how their consciousness is manipulated is that people don't realize, for the most part, I'm talking about working class people, middle class, don't realize the nature of the problem as far as elitist control of their lives. Now, you might think that nobody controls my life. You know, I do what I want. Well, I go back to, you know, you get up in the morning, what do? You go to work for 8 hours. And so now more and more people are working more than just 8 hours. They're working two jobs just to, you know, stay afloat, because the cost of living is so out of control, particularly in terms of, you know, housing and people losing. There was just a mass amount of people losing their homes because they can't pay their mortgage. Well, so you're not really free. You know, you may be free to some extent to choose your occupation, but the fact remains. Nowadays, if you're unemployed and looking for a job, you're one amongst many, many people going for that particular job. And for every job that's available, unless it's like fast food or something like that, you know, minimum wage job, if you're in the market looking for a job, a decent paying job, you're one amongst maybe hundreds of people applying for that job. That's all orchestrated. That's not an accident. You know, why are there so many people looking for work and not enough work going around? Because it makes us competitive, and we compete against our fellow man in terms of economics. Oh, well, you know, I'll compete this guy to get this job. And so that's very deliberate to keep people separate from each other and, you know, looking at the other person more as a detriment or as a competitive factor than as a cooperative factor, because the system doesn't want people to cooperate in empowering themselves, you know, in terms of economics or lifestyle or whatever. We're all individuals competing against each other. It's very deliberate. That's the nature of capitalism. It's the nature of transnational capitalism, and it's also part of the agenda of the Illuminati, is to keep us separate, competitive, and actually hostile towards each other. I don't want to go too far afield with that. I'll give you some other examples of how the Illuminati works in terms of the New World Order. One of their goals is a consolidation of power and to pretty much undermine national sovereignty. So now we look at globalism. You know, in the last 30, 40 years, we can see how national sovereignty has been whittled away in terms of international organizations or networks, whether that be NAFTA, where jobs, especially in the last couple of decades in America, have been shipped overseas to foreign countries, whether it be India or Central South America, Mexico, China, where there's cheap labor. More and more Americans are losing their jobs, factories closing down, and goods being made overseas and imported rather than being manufactured and produced here in this country. That's a very deliberate process. It's just part of globalism, where now you're not just competing with your fellow Americans for a job, but you're competing worldwide with cheap labor throughout the world. And whether it be imported labor, or, you know, you still have sweatshop labor here in the United States, but you got your Macabaderos, for example, in Mexico, where rather than pay an auto worker $30 an hour and give them, you know, insurance and pension, that job shifts overseas to someone who's making maybe $4 a day, you know, just barely squeaking by with no labor union or control over their work environment, environmental hazards, toxins, which in this country we have some protection, you know, through laws, the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, oceans, that kind of thing, where we have some protection from environmental pollutants, whereas when the jobs get shipped overseas, they don't have any of that protection. As a matter of fact, people who try to organize within labor unions are targeted for, they're either eliminated physically or, you know, they don't have a job. And so we're competing now in terms of the world economy, and that's called globalism, and that's transnational capitalism, whatever you want to call it. It's the same thing. It's the concentration of control over the economic system by the elites. The European Union is a good example of how that's evolved in the last 10 years, where more and more nations, countries are pressured into becoming part of the European Union as part of this that economic order, national boundaries being obliterated, national sovereignty being superseded by the European Union Commission or political order. And in this part of the world, in the United States, we're looking at North American Union, where there's an effort now to obliterate borders between Canada and Mexico, make one union out of the North American continent, including Mexico, and same efforts being made in Central and South America, unification of the countries under one economic umbrella through the World Bank, for example, which has tremendous influence throughout the world in terms of providing capital loans and technology to countries that in turn have to give up or in exchange for their resources, you know, their the minerals, energy production, the forests, deforestation, control. Again, it all goes back to control, whether it be, you know, through the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, these capitalists, the transnational capital organizations, providing the resources, financial resources, to gain access and control over all resources within the world, to manipulate the politics and economy of those countries, consolidation of power. And that's what it's all about. So what role does Congress play, for example, in all of this, U.S. Congress? Well, to me, the two-party system is a joke. You know, we pride ourselves on being a democracy, but we're really an autocracy. An autocracy basically is control by a few elitists over the rest of the population. That's what we have. We don't really have a democracy. We vote every 4 years. But what kind of choice do we have between the Republicans and the Democrats, who, again, are influenced and manipulated by these forces, these plutocrats, the rich families, and these organizations, the CFR and the Trilateral Commission? It's really, we don't have much of a selection, although, you know, there are some minor differences, I must admit, between, you know, for example, the two presidential candidates. I'm not going to go into any, you know, detail on that, but basically what I'm saying is that the two-party system is kind of a joke. It's different sides of the same coin. Because both parties, Republican and Democratic parties, are highly manipulated by these powers that be that I'm talking about, by the plutocrats. Therefore, whether it be the president or Congress, we're all We're looking at individuals that are highly influenced, if not controlled 100% by these organizations, and they have, you know, their agenda, and their agenda is not the agenda of the American people for the most part. Their agenda is elitist, and one of the things, again, they want to accomplish is consolidated control and power over the people. Now, how is that happening here in the United States? Well, we're one of the few countries in the world that has a constitution that is a guiding force in terms of, you know, how people participate as citizens in this country. And unfortunately, our constitutional rights are being whittled away to the point where we hardly have any rights at all. And it's becoming more and more obvious. If you look at the fact that people who are not happy with politics as usual, who want to dissent, how protesters are increasingly being repressed by a brutal police force, you know, military and police oppression and repression of political dissidents, almost to the point where we're looking at what's happening in China and other parts of the world, people being imprisoned just for protesting, you know, expressing an opinion different from the people who are in power. Well, we had our First Amendment right of freedom of speech through the press and religion and political dissent, but that's not really the case. We know we're subjected to repressive and brutal police and military reactions to that political dissent. So, you know, that's being willed away. I don't know if we ever really had free speech in this country. It's more of an ideal than a reality. More so, we have more free speech in probably in this country than in most parts of the world. But the Patriot Act, which was passed after 9/11, a very draconian measure as far as you know, who's deemed a terrorist, for example, you know, and perhaps anybody that expresses a contrary opinion to the administration is labeled a terrorist, could be labeled a homegrown terrorist under surveillance and suspicion by the government. Of course, you know, the security apparatus of NASA, or I should say National Security Administration, is run amok. Just about anybody could be under surveillance. I wouldn't be surprised if this conversation is under surveillance because, you know, I'm expressing an opinion that's not popular with the powers that be. So we have increased surveillance, eavesdropping as a result of the Patriot Act. Is kind of reminiscent of the McCarthy era during the 50s when anybody that expressed a different opinion from the prevailing norm was labeled the communist. You know, that's another interesting ploy or tactic that people should become aware of, that our attention or our thinking is manipulated easily by creating foreign enemies. And once upon a time it was the communists, you know, in the 50s after World War II. It was the communist boogeyman. Everybody that was a dissident was labeled a communist. And we had to be vigilant about fighting communism. That was the reason why we got involved in the Vietnam War, supposedly, because of the North Vietnamese, the Chinese, you know, Russians taking over that part of the world, Southeast Asia. Well, that was bogus. That's not to say that there isn't communism in the world. There is. But, again, I go back to who's in control of the political and economic order and the military throughout the world. It's the Illuminati. And the Illuminati, when they're one way they operate is to create havoc, create chaos, create enemy camps. The Illuminati, through the various aristocracy, the various families that I mentioned, support any ideology, particularly fascism. And fascism takes on many different faces. It takes on the face of communism. It could be a tyrannical despot, like Pinochet, for example, or the tyranny of state socialism, which is euphemism for communism, like in China, where, you know, political dissidents are eliminated or imprisoned. The Illuminati, through the various families that I mentioned and the various organizations, influence every country, every political system in the world, and it influences communism, it influences capitalism. And what it tries to eliminate is democracy and socialism. So, an individual freedom and liberty. So we have an organization, secret societies, behind the scenes, manipulating world affairs by creating wars. And they support both sides of the war. I mentioned the Nazis, Hitler, being supported by the Illuminati at the same time, you know, supported the Allied forces. They were supporting both sides through technology and through capital investment and through the war machine. People don't realize this. The war is a huge game that's played at the expense of people who are caught up in it. Again, it's a matter of manipulation and control. So we should take a more critical look at this whole facet of life in terms of warfare and not getting caught up in the latest enemy. You know, who's the latest enemy? As I mentioned earlier, communism. Well, now we don't hear much about communism, although it does exist, of course, you know, again, in China and North Korea and whatnot. Now the enemy is terrorists. And of course, it's the Arab world. This is the new enemy. Again, this is a distraction. And I'm not saying that there aren't so-called terrorists, Arab fanatics or militant people, but that's a whole nother ballgame, which would take a long time to explain. But the point I'm trying to make is that the Illuminati manipulates our attention, our focus, and our values, our perceptions, our ideology, by creating enemies outside of the realm of the real enemy, as far as I'm concerned, which is the Illuminati. The real enemy is the Illuminati doing the manipulation and control, because they don't want to be identified as the controllers. They don't want to be identified as the enslavers. They don't want to be identified as the oppressors or supporting dictatorships. They don't want to be identified as the ones that are responsible for environmental degradation. That's part of their manipulation. Kind of going a little far afield generally, but I want to go back to a particular organization that's tied in with the Illuminati, Skull and Bones. George Bush, the Duke Bush family, Skull and Bones people. Skull and Bones is a secret organization that it operates out of Yale University. And most the influential people in politics have been exposed to Skull and Bones. They're a member of the Skull and Bones. There have been a couple of movies called Skulls 1 and 2 that can touch on the rituals associated with Skull and Bones. And they practice, the members of the Skull and Bones practice satanic rituals. And what does that mean? It means that they engage in perverse activities, associated with death, sexual perversions, drug addiction, kind of stuff you would associate with the mafia, you know, extortion, drug running, child pedophilia, those kinds of things, skull and bones. They worship warfare, competitiveness, backstabbing kind of manipulative activity. When you become a member of Skull and Bones, you learn about the various sordid activities of the members, and that's used as a manipulation of various members. So, you know, in other words, bribery and that kind of thing. So people don't spill the beans, and then, you know, they take an oath of loyalty to protect one another, and they all have a bunch of skeletons in the closet, so, you know, they watch each other's back, so to speak. Skull and Bones, people all look into Skull and Bones. The Bohemian Grove is a place where in Northern California, about 2,000 acres in the redwoods, where the elite meet during the summertime for, you know, a retreat. It's like the Bilderbergers in Europe, where they get together and they party heartily in all kinds of perverse ways. And I've heard or read that there's child sacrifice, there's human sacrifice rituals, homosexuality, drugs, you know, it's just hedonism to the nth degree at the Bohemian Grove, which has been going on for many years. And powerful people in politics, in banking, in entertainment, Hollywood, the media, sports come together there, and they commiserate and, you know, plot and plan and scheme and stuff like that and have a good time. It's hard to infiltrate the Bohemian Grove. It's well protected, the military, armed guards and stuff like that. But every so often there are people infiltrated. So again, this is another example of a group of people, organizations working behind the scenes, a fraternal club for the most part. It's pretty much a fraternity rather than a sorority, although obviously women are involved to some extent, but peripherally. It's pretty much male-dominated. Organizations that are controlling things behind the scenes. I want to talk about energy as one facet of their control. We're dependent upon fossil fuel for our energy needs over hydropower. And if we think about it, you know, this is another way that the system controls us. Where do we get our energy from? It's all centralized, whether it be natural gas or coal or oil or nuclear power, or even solar for that matter, with these massive solar collectors that are not decentralized. You know, they're out there in the desert collecting solar power. Again, generated through electrical lines and whatnot. Our energy is totally centralized and out of our individual control. And that's very purposeful. That's very deliberate. You know, if you can't generate your own energy, then you're economically dependent upon the energy industries. And it's obvious, you know, with almost everybody, especially in this country, drives a car. How can you get along without a car? It's difficult. I do it. I live in a small town. I don't drive a car, and I'm really glad. I used to drive, you know, most of my life I've driven a car. It's such a burden. you know, to for the upkeep and the gas and maintenance and all that kind of stuff. You spend a lot of money just on, you know, providing transportation, which is a necessity for you to get to work. And there's other ways, you know. It's like, well, more and more people are working from their home and doing the home industry, which they don't really need a car, but most of us need a car. General Motors now asking for, you know, a bailout, $25 billion. Well, I find that pretty sad. It seems to me that if our representatives were more concerned about what's going on with environmental degradation and the effects of carbon emissions and greenhouse gases and whatnot, and global warming, you know, that we would be moving away from individual transportation systems and investing in public transportation. You know, it's like, yeah, there's some very good public transportation systems in various cities like San Francisco and New York, where they have monorail or Amtrak, things like that. We could be investing, we being the political, the politicians could be investing in public transportation systems, so we wouldn't be so dependent upon oil and fossil fuels. But, I mean, that's not even in the debate. You don't hear anything about that. It's just bailout of these corporations, you know. It's just the elite garnering more money and being incompetent in terms of what they do. I don't want to necessarily see a bunch of people unemployed because, you know, General Motors is not going to get their bailout. I mean, it's a bunch of auto factories are going to close down, but we should be investing in public transportation. And maybe different ways of earning money rather than commuting on freeways, you know, which, again, you live in a big city, you're going to spend a lot of time commuting on the freeway, and that's madness. Besides all the, you know, byproduct of pollution, our whole energy system is askew. We're on a slippery slope downhill towards a total environmental collapse and catastrophe. Anybody that's kept up with what's going on in the environment knows that we're approaching a critical point where we're not going to be able to turn around the massive destruction of the environment, the melting of the glaciers throughout the world, the polar ice caps melting, permafrost melting, massive deforestation, the expansion of coal-fired power plants, for example, in China. You know, we're kind of limited here in the United States, but they're expanding it in other parts of the world, the dangers of nuclear power. We're just habituated to destructive ways of living that could very well have resulted in the extinction of the human race, and I think that's where we're headed. People have to wake up. They have to realize that there's other ways to live. There's more constructive ways to maintain a livelihood, you know, to use energy or to use less energy. You know, what can you do individually? You can use less energy, or you can become energy conscious in terms of the kind of light bulbs that you use, the kind of car that you drive, the hybrid cars, you know, an improvement over the gas guzzlers. I saw something on TV recently where this guy has an all-electric car. He's got a bunch of batteries in the back of his trunk. No gasoline. It's all electric. And he raced the combustion engine, you know, and he beat him, like, you know, hands down. It's got tremendous torque. So, and it gets, you know, you don't need to go to a gas station. We can, if the General Motors considering, you know, retooling, that's where they should be putting their infrastructure in terms of electric cars, where you don't have to go to a gas station. You just plug it into your house, some outlet or something like that. And there are some like outlets like that in California, I know, but they're far and few in between. We don't need to be dependent upon fossil fuels for energy. That's just another example of concentration of power and control over the population. Well, the basic needs, you know, food, housing, healthcare, we don't have control over that either. As far as, you know, once upon a time, 100 years ago, people had their gardens, you know, their little farms. And nowadays, like, most of us are dependent upon other people growing our food for us. Of course, it's nice and it's convenient to go to the market and go shopping so you don't have to spend all that time growing your own food. But when you don't have control over your own food, you don't have control over basic necessity. It's like, what would happen if the whole transportation system collapsed and the trucks couldn't get to the markets and there was no food available? You know, like, we would perish in a matter of weeks. Very dependent upon this distribution of food that we don't have control over. You know, it's a blessing and a curse at the same time. Personally, I don't want to spend a lot of time growing my own food, but again, there's that disadvantage where you don't have control over your food. But that also means that you don't know what's in your food. You don't know what kind of toxins, how it's produced. And our food is becoming more and more toxic because of herbicides and pesticides and hormones and antibiotics and herbicides, on and on and on. Our food is adulterated, and no wonder why we have such an increase in illness, you know, here in this country, supposedly one of the most advanced countries in the world. You know, we have, like, one of the highest rates of cancer and heart disease and arthritis and stuff like that. It's partly because of the food and how the food is tainted and polluted, and the choices that we make as far as, you know, what we eat. And the healthcare system, it's just similar. You know, we rely upon doctors, many of us, to take care of us. Rather than becoming more self-reliant and doing the homework, researching what's healthy for you in terms of the food that you eat, the kind of lifestyle that you had, you know, you have your exercise patterns and that kind of thing. So, you know, we may think that we're free and independent, and yet we are very much controlled by these systems that, for the most part, are out of our control and undermine our health and undermine our freedom. And it's all part of the Illuminati. It's just business as usual. It's just the way things are. We're on a crash course, folks, and I think people have to wake up and look at alternatives and try to gain control over these facets of our life. Become involved in more community organizing and networking and reliance, you know, on your neighbor. And we don't know our neighbors, and we're alienated from everybody. And people are suspicious of each other, don't trust each other, you know. And crime, you hear about crime all the time on TV and the media, and people don't trust one another. We're in a sad state of affairs as far as civilization is concerned. There needs to be some dramatic changes taking place. And so I guess I'm getting close to the time that I got maybe a couple more minutes. I don't know, Eugene, are you there? Do you want to say anything? Or you want to make a comment? Oh, he's not online. Okay. Well, I guess we'll end a little bit early. I pretty much said everything I want to say, other than if you want to contact me with your comments. I can be reached at email operationvoodoo, that's VOODOO, at yahoo.com. Thanks for listening. And next show I'll be talking about spirituality, which is like totally different. You know, I know a lot of the stuff I've covered here in this talk has been very depressing. But there is another side, and there is hope. And so I hope everybody has a chance to listen next week. Thanksgiving, I'll be talking about spirituality and more uplifting topic. Thank you.